Midnight Radio Network. I'm Eric Harley. Gary McNamara has the day off. Welcome to Ask the Law. This is Ask the Law for Monday, July 11, 2011. And retired senior trooper Monty Dials with Texas Highway Patrol is here. A service of Old Blue USA. Information and answers to questions can change without notice. By the way, comments made by anyone other than Trooper Dial are considered to be opinions only. AskTheLaw.org is the website. Click on that big red button that says Email Ask the Law. Submit your CMV questions at any time. Trooper Dial, welcome back. How are you?
I am glad to be here.
You know, I was just commenting because you took an extended vacation. You left the country. You did a whirlwind European tour.
Yes, we did.
Yeah, and you walk in, you look like 20 pounds lighter, and you said it's because you ate too much food.
Yes. Yes.
What? I don't get that.
You had breakfast,
yeah.
You had lunch, and you had supper, and any time the bus stopped, you was eating because you didn't know when you was going to eat next.
Wow. Now, let me ask you, was there any snacking between? You just pretty much did your meals. Is that
no,
how
there was snacking in between.
Snacking in between. Oh, man. I want that diet. I want that diet. Well, welcome back. You look great. I had a great time, I assume.
Yes.
Yeah. My wife and I want to do that. I'm pretty excited because we booked a trip. You know, we're just going to Tahoe. It's not like it's, you know, anything that, you know, you can't do on any given day. But we're so excited because we've been talking about going on this vacation. The past couple of years have been very hectic. We have a couple of businesses. We both have day jobs or night jobs. And it's been tough to schedule, so we finally scheduled it today. I said, forget it. Stop right here, right now. Where do you want to stay? So we picked the place, and we booked the trip, and it's a done deal. So we're pretty excited about it, but we want to do that. One of our options on this particular vacation was Ireland, and I told her, I said, we just don't have enough time. There's just not enough time to do all of it. I want to be able to go at least a couple of weeks.
Definitely. Yeah. You've got, we were gone 17 days.
Yeah.
And, of course we had a day and a half, after we got there before we got on the bus and, got back to London, 14 days later. The next day, we had a flight back to the States.
Yeah.
And, there were some people that, were on the tour with us that they were leaving, going over into Europe and doing a week tour just in Europe.
Yeah. Yeah.
So,
Wow. Well, I really envy you. That's what I want to do. I told my wife, I said, you know, if we ever get to the point where we don't know what to do, we're just going to travel. You know what I mean? My folks do that quite a bit. They're snowbirds, so they hang out with their RV friends all the time. But it's really great. So, welcome back, and here
yes.
we are. We were out in June. June was our summer break from Ask the Law.
Correct.
And we actually they saw some on the Road Check 2011. They actually saw one of the lowest numbers of out of service
yes.
in a while.
Yes.
So it went pretty well. Did you talk to some of your old buddies?
No, I haven't had a chance to. But I'm like you. I read a lot of the articles posted.
Yeah.
And I think CBSA and FMCSA were proud of the numbers
yeah.
that they've got. And to me, it shows that the industry, the drivers, and the companies are working hard to make sure that they get good reports for CSA.
Right. Well, I guess it's probably a combination of, you know, people are learning, and I guess the whole idea of getting the word out is
yes.
working too. You know, that has always been the great thing about Road Check is that if you don't know about it, it's just because you're not paying attention.
Right.
It's everywhere. It's everywhere. All right. On Friday, we got, get this. Now, as far as I know, I'm the only person that has put this together. Now, we only had a net increase of 18,000 jobs in June.
Okay.
So the unemployment rate rose on Friday to 9.2% from 9.1%.
Okay.
Another separate article at eTrucker.com pointed out that trucking has added 4,400 jobs. That's 25% of the jobs created in the United States in the month of June were in the trucking industry. Wow.
Yes.
That's huge.
It is.
That is huge. I'd love to see the numbers and how they account for the trucking jobs. Obviously, the unemployment rate is based on the unemployment claims that people file.
Correct.
There was some, in fact, it was kind of a mixed message last week when on Wednesday or Thursday they announced the ADP numbers. ADP is the largest payroll company.
Right.
And they had added on payrolls, they had added somewhere around 150,000, which was, like, I think it was 151,000. That was huge. But we got into Friday and we realized the unemployment claims were jumping dramatically. It is not, it turns out that it just simply is not good news right now. But trucking adding 4,400 jobs in the month of June. I'd just love to see how these are tallied and how that, and how that holds up against unemployment.
Right.
But if you look at the net increase of jobs in the United States was 18,000 for the month of June. 4,400 of those were in trucking, so just under 25%
yes.
of the jobs created in the month of June. All right. Now, there are several things on the table. I'm sure you saw that the cross-border program with Mexico is a go.
Yes.
So, the Mexican carriers can apply now. All right. I had seen at one source that there were millions of crossings on the Mexican border over the last few years.
Yes.
Okay. Certainly those are crossings and not separate vehicles.
No, that's what they do is they keep track of the actual number of trucks that cross either from Mexico into the U.S. or
right.
U.S. back into Mexico.
Okay, so those millions, and it was, I think, somewhere in the area, 4.9 million.
Yeah.
That could mean U.S. trucks going into Mexico and Mexican trucks coming into the U.S.
Correct.
And each time a truck comes through, so if one truck comes through 100 times, that's considered 100 crossings.
That's correct.
Okay. All right. Because I thought to myself, first of all, the last time we checked, it was a few years ago, there were only a few hundred thousand CDL holders in Mexico. So
correct.
It didn't add up.
Correct.
And so now we have, this case where there was plenty of activity of border crossings.
Yes.
It doesn't necessarily mean that all of those were headed into, deep territory within the U.S., though. Those
No.
were simply border crossings.
Border crossings. What they do is they will keep track of a truck crossing one border from one country into another country.
Right.
Obviously, we do have some trucking companies that were grandfathered prior to 1991
mm-hmm.
when the NAFTA agreement was established. So we do have some grandfathered trucking companies that have continually crossed
yeah.
in compliance. Then we had the wave that came through 2-3 years ago under George Bush.
Mm.
And I think we only ended up with somewhere in the neighborhood of less than 50 actual Mexican motor carriers that were granted authority to go beyond the border zone.
That's during the first pilot program.
During the first pilot program. Obviously, that program was killed, but we still had the trucking companies that were grandfathered that are still crossing.
Right, and they're not affected by this cross-border program agreement.
No.
And if it went away, they would still be able to do that.
That is correct.
And we get those questions all the time. Hey, how is it that we see these Mexican trucks crossing all the time before
Right.
This program, or the pilot program, originally began under the former administration. All right. In that case, we had 50 or so that were granted, 50 or so carriers that were granted
right.
during that pilot program.
Right. They were trying to get 100 motor carriers, and my understanding is they had less than 50.
And that's when Mary Peters extended it, right?
Right.
So they right. were basically, in the excuse that the U.S. gave was basically, all right, we believe that the lack of participation
correct.
Is based on the short term of this pilot program.
Correct.
We want to stretch it out to see if we get more participation.
Correct.
I'm not sure that I buy that, but okay. And now we have, and as you mentioned, the Democratic Congress came in, they killed the funding for it in March of 2009. The current administration, the Obama administration, put the program to bed. We predicted that it would come back because it's part of NAFTA.
Right.
It was court-ordered under the Bush administration.
Right.
It would happen again. There were tariffs that were introduced from the Mexican side, so against the U.S. So we've been going back and forth. As we predicted, there would be another pilot program.
Yes.
And now here we are. The unfortunate part is that not all of the details have come out yet. And that has been, I think, the concern for many of the groups out there that oppose this, is they say, first of all, that's irresponsible, and we can get into that on another time. But is there any reason to believe that, any information that you have, any reason to believe that there would be a greater participation in 2011 under a cross-border program than there was before? The 50 or so... Isn't I don't think necessarily because so many disqualified or didn't qualify to cross. I think it's because you just simply, as Mary Peters pointed out, you just didn't have any interest in it. You didn't have any participation. Is there any reason to believe, any information we have that says they would be willing now to participate under any changes in the rules?
No. It's still. It's one of those situations that the government is going to have to beg Mexican motor carriers.
Right, like they had to beg Canacar, by the way.
Right.
Yeah, which is the Mexican Carrier Association.
Right. They had to beg for them to get them to participate.
Yeah.
And, you know, first off, it's not economically feasible
right.
for these Mexican motor carriers to participate.
You get above the U.S., it's a dollar more per gallon in fuel, roughly?
Well, it's not so much that. It's so much that, first off, there has, you know, currently the United States does not recognize the registration of a Mexican motor carrier.
Okay.
So, instead, you know, he's got to buy a Mexican tag, and he's got to buy a tag from one of the states on the U.S. side. So he's basically having to double register the vehicle. The second part is they're having to double insure
the
motor carriers.
Right.
He has to have insurance in Mexico, and he has to have insurance from a company doing business
in
the United States.
Yep.
So he has to have double registration,
mm-hmm.
double insurance,
mm-hmm.
and then we start getting into the cost of the fuel, the cost of this, the cost of that,
right.
and it's just not economically feasible
right.
For them.
Because of the economy in Mexico.
Right.
And some will make that comparison to Canada, but obviously the economy right now, in fact, in Canada, they're seeing better growth than we are. So that actually does work there. We're going to go to a break here, and drivers, get on board. If you have questions about hours of service, CSA, maybe something's happened to you recently on the road and you're wondering, is that going to affect you under CSA? 800-288-9227. That's how you get in. Ask the law right now. Retired Senior Trooper Monty Dial, courtesy of Old Blue USA, is here. Let's get your questions in at 800-288-9227 on the Midnight Radio Network. It's the Midnight Radio Network. Eric Harley here. Gary McNamara is off. It is Ask the Law for Monday, July 11, 2011. Retired Senior Trooper Monty Dial of the Texas Highway Patrol is here. It is a service of Old Blue USA, and the website is hassellaw.org. Information and answers to questions can change without notice. They are up to date as of today, July 11, 2011, and all the comments made by anyone other than Trooper Dial are considered to be opinions only. Stand by. We've got some drivers on hold, and if you want to get in, this is a good time. Vic and others, stand by, because we'll get to your questions in just a few minutes. I want to give you plenty of time on the other side of the break, plenty to talk about when it comes to CSA, hours of service. And if you have a question about CSA, about hours of service, get in right now at 800-288-9227. This is free information for you. Ask the law for Monday, July 11, 2011. Get on board now at 800-288-9227. Vic, we'll go to you first after the break, so stand by for that and more, and weather coming up at 33 past right here on the Midnight Radio Network. It's the Midnight Radio Network. Eric Hurley, Gary McNamara is off. He's back tomorrow. It is Ask the Law for Monday, July 11, 2011. Retired Senior Trooper Monty Dial with the Texas Highway Patrol is here at the service of Old Blue USA. All the information is up to date as of today and can change without notice. Comments made by anyone other than Trooper Dial are considered to be opinions only. AskTheLaw.org is the website. Click on that big red button that says Email. Ask the Law. And let's get right to you. We have some questions coming in, and we will go to Vic first in Oklahoma. Good morning, Vic. How are you?
I'm doing just fine today.
Welcome. Pretty good.
I've got a question about hours of service. I work out in the old batch, and I cross over from Texas into Oklahoma quite a bit. I was just going to ask the trooper, do all field hours of service still apply when you cross over state lines, sir?
Yes, that
they do still apply.
Yes, what we're going to do is go back into 395.2, and
yes,
that's where you're going to find what hours a oil field operation is entitled to.
Okay, 395.2.
So, yes, sir.
Okay, all right. I was always told that if any time you crossed over state lines, it became interstate instead of intrastate, and so there's been a lot of controversy over that.
What we're going to do, Vic, is we're going to look at the origin and destination of the load. So,
yes,
you know, you could sit there and have one of your buddies pick the load up and say he drops it off just on the inside the Oklahoma line, and you pick it up and take it further on into Oklahoma. We look at the origin and destination. Where did that load originate? What is the final destination? And everybody that gets underneath that load is still going to be involved in interstate. So just because you only had a portion that kept it within the state of Oklahoma, the fact is it was still classed as an interstate load.
That was what I was getting at. Is I normally pick loads up in Oklahoma and then take them back into Texas.
Yeah.
And unload them in Texas. And,
right.
That was my main question right,
right what,
there. But it's
what you need to do, Vic, is go in and make sure if you don't have one of the big management books, get on FMCSA's website and look up some of the definitions in 395.1 and 395.2. There's some interpretations in there that deal strictly with oil field, and you have to be involved in the actual exploration, drilling, servicing of the oil well to be entitled to use the oil field exemptions that are afforded in 395.2.
Okay. I'll sure look into that. I sure do appreciate the information, sir.
Thank you, Vic. We do appreciate it. And
have a good evening.
You too. Drive safe. Thank you so much. And that's, I think, the first time we've had that question. In all the years that we've been doing this, that's intriguing to me that we actually get a fresh question. Folks, we get, and by the way, drivers, There are no silly questions you may think, well, gosh, I don't want to ask that. Because, I mean, over the years, we've gotten a lot of repeat questions, and that's okay because we realize that the audience, we have new members of the audience all the time. So this is the time to get in at 800-288-9227. You got a question about CSA, hours of service, or any other regulatory question. Right now, get on board at 800-288-9227. We should be able to get you in before the next commercial break. So, all right. So if it depends on the job he's doing in the oil field.
Yes.
But if he's doing one that pertains directly to the exploration or drilling, and he crosses the line, the state line, it still could fall in the oil field exemption?
Yes. Irregardless of whether you're involved in intrastate or interstate.
Right.
As long as you meet the requirements in 395.1 and 395.2 mm-hmm. for the oil field exemption. And it's one of those that you have to be involved in the servicing of an active well. You can get and use the oil field exemption. A lot of people think, well, just because I'm going to a well site that I get to take and use the oil field exemption. There's more to it than that, and that's why I always say, go back and look what the regs tell you of what you are entitled to claim if you are involved in the oil field, because not everybody in the oil field gets to claim the oil field exemption.
Yeah, that's interesting. And it can probably get a bit squirrely, probably plenty of misunderstandings in that part of the industry then.
Oh, yeah. And like I say, a lot of them think, well, I'm involved in the oil field, so I'm entitled to that oil field. Well, not everybody that works in the oil field is entitled to the oil field exemption.
Right. Yeah, that's interesting. Mike writes an email, wants to know, he says, y'all were talking about road check, and basically, I guess his question is if something under road check was noted during the inspection, is that going to show up under CSA?
Yes, any violation that appears on the actual roadside inspection. FMCSA doesn't care, with the exception of a few, whether or not a citation was or was not issued. And I think the only thing that they're looking at is speeding. If a citation was issued for speeding, it counts more than if it was just a warning. But any violation that shows up on the roadside inspection will affect the motor carrier's safety data.
Yeah. All right. 800-288-9227. Let's go to Minnesota. And Tom is up next. Hi, Tom. How are you?
Good. How are you?
Good. Welcome to Ask the Law.
Yeah, I got a question about personal conveyance. I'm an owner-operator, and I start and stop at the same terminal every day. And my question is if I'm running up against my 14 hours, and I'm going to bobtail home under personal conveyance, and I have to pass a scale, and they want to do a inspection, what happens if you're under personal conveyance and you cannot go to on-duty? Because that'll go over the 14 hours.
Good question. So during that inspection, is he on duty, and what happens?
What happens, and here again, Tom, it's going to be one of those fine lines to whether or not you can convince the man who's got the gold and the gun on what you're doing. What I would recommend that you do is either get the big management edition of the Fed regs, or go on to FMCSA's website, look up 395.8 interpretations, and print out question number 26.
Okay.
Because question 26 is going to be the personal conveyance. And as long as you can take and prove to him that, hey, I dropped my trailer at point A, I am going home for off-duty time, and I'm going back to the terminal to get my trailer, then all of that time is considered personal conveyance. You're using it just like anybody else driving up and down that road that's going from point A to point B.
Correct, yeah, because I start out and I start my day and end my day at the same loading dock.
Right.
And then if I decide to go home, then I just go to off-duty.
Yes.
And then I put it as personal conveyance, but... I keep my fingers crossed with the goofy state of Minnesota. They're shut down. They boarded up and barricaded all the way stations.
Oh, right. Yeah, I was going to ask you about that. Now, their budget, they're still, you know, haggling out about their budget in Minnesota. They apparently have not come to any agreement, and all the rest areas are shut down. So are you telling me the way stations are shut down right now, too, in Minnesota?
Yes, sir. The big one coming in from Wisconsin. Into Minnesota, they parked all their DOT vehicles in there, barricaded them up, and
wow.
Yeah, every way station shut down. I believe that about 50% of the commercial vehicle inspectors, 50% are actual state troopers. The other 50 they're not actual licensed peace officers. So I believe the ones are still doing random checks here and there that are actual state troopers. But
Wow, that's interesting. Well, thank you, Tom, for that update, and we appreciate you calling in to Ask the Law. There was a couple of questions. What we'll do is we'll go to a break. I have a couple of follow-ups for you, Trooper Dial, and drivers, more importantly. We'll let you get your questions in first. Joe in Dallas and others, we want you to stand by 800-288-9227 as we go to a break. This is a good time to get in and take up some of this space we have on our phone lines right now at 800-288-9227. Ask the Law back in a moment on the Midnight Radio Network. It's the Midnight Radio Network. Eric Harley, Ask the Law, with retired senior trooper Monty Dial of the Texas Highway Patrol, brought to you by Old Blue USA. Information and answers to questions are up to date and can change without notice. And today is July 11, 2011. Everybody check your calendar. Okay. All right. All the information and answers to questions can change without notice. Comments made by anyone other than Trooper Dial are considered to be opinions only. Let's go to Joe in Big D. Hi, Joe. How are you?
I'm doing pretty good. How about you guys?
Good. Welcome.
I booked for a small winery, and we're trying to get started and whatnot. And one of my questions was, if we're transporting wine, are we allowed to use a rented vehicle, or is that then considered bootlegging?
How big of a vehicle are we talking about, Joe?
Probably like a U-Haul or something of that size. Nothing. Not like a trailer, separated trailer kind of thing.
Okay, next question is, where are you going to be hauling the wine from and to?
From winery to winery, for like filtering or processing or that kind of stuff, not distribution.
Okay.
Inside Texas.
Strictly inside the state of Texas.
Strictly inside the state of Texas, yes.
Okay, what you need to do is the DOT regulations would not be applicable to you unless you went over 26,000 pounds, actual weight, registered weight, or GVWR.
Which is gross vehicle weight rating.
Okay.
So anything under 26,000, he's okay. Are there any other laws that pertain to transporting the wine?
What you're going to need to do is check with the ABC, Alcohol Beverage Commission.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
And find out from them, you know, as long as it's not bottled wine, I think that's the only requirement that they have. But check with them to find out whether or not you have to register with them as a wine transporter.
All right. Well, so check out TABC, and they'll figure out or they'll tell you what you
right.
need to know there.
Right.
Joe,
right.
thank you so much. We appreciate that. And stand by, David in Michigan and others. If you want to get on board, this is the time right now at 800-288-9227. By the way, I think that's a first, a bootlegging question on Ask the Law. And we are back in a moment on the Midnight Radio Network.